let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason if we dig deep in our history and our doctrine and remember that we are not descended from fearful men.
Talking shit talk. Welcome back to Talking Shiitake. This is Christian.
And this is Katie.
Hey, Katie, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Christian, and you?
I'm doing well. The sun's out in Alaska, finally.
The sun's out in Alaska. Isn't it out for, like, months at a time?
I hear it is, but a lot of times it's cloudy and rainy, so it's kind of hard to tell.
So how many hours of daylight do you have right now?
It's on the downswing now, but it'll get dark here probably around close to midnight, maybe a little after. And, you know, the sun, you'll see, it'll get daylight again around 6 in the morning.
Interesting.
So, it's pretty long still, but we're moving toward the part where there's no vitamin D because there's barely any sun. You know, so everybody's going to be depressed here soon.
So, would you rather have sun all day or no sun?
I would rather have a healthy mixture of sun.
Right.
Where there's some
That's
darkness.
That's why people don't live up there.
Right. And the people that do. Well, in the summer, people are generally really happy up here because of the sun. There is a lot of sun, but It takes some getting used to.
I'm sure. It would have to.
So how's that global warming doing in California?
It's pretty hot. It's, I think it was not quite 100 today, but I think tomorrow's supposed to be like 104 or 106, so it's going to be warm.
I will say I did not appreciate Southern California weather quite the way I should have until I moved to Alaska.
Kind of never really appreciate what you got till it's gone. Isn't that a song?
It is a song.
Did you want to go ahead and sing it?
No, you're the one that sings songs just out of the blue. I know we haven't proven that to the podcast listeners, but soon.
One day.
So, I think we should get into our subject.
Yeah, it's going to be a little complex.
Complex. We'll try to make it simple. We're gonna talk about evolution.
Evolution?
Yeah, don't
you? Isn't that a common topic? Doesn't everybody talk about evolution?
I think a lot of people talk about evolution. We might go down some of those similar paths, but I'm sure we have our own take on it, and we can go to some interesting areas. We can evolve the conversation on evolution.
Very nice. This is the shiitake version. And we're not talking evolution versus creation, or maybe you are, but I wasn't really going to go there very much.
You don't want to offend anybody?
It's not really about offending anybody. It's about moving on from that. It's about evolving from that debate. Because, I mean, you can take it all, you know, people can debate science. I don't say science is perfect. I don't think that they have all the answers to everything. But we do have things called carbon dating, and you can have your own little controversy on what you think carbon dating might be. But science has proven that, believe it or not, whatever you want to believe, that, you know, the universe is 13.8 billion years old. And they may be off by, you know, a million or 2 years, but this is what we've come up with. The advanced science that we have today, if we're going by those standards, by the modern scientific model of what we have today, which that's kind of what I go by, because that's really all we really have to go by. And we could theorize about a bunch of different things. But as far as in my opinion, let's just start there and move forward.
So we're going to go farther back, or we're going to talk about things that started farther back than 6,000 years ago?
Maybe a little bit.
We should, for that kind of debate, I think everybody should look up the science guy, Bill Nye.
Bill Nye, the science guy.
He has a debate with a a believer in creationism.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty popular, and I've heard the scientific side, or what some may call the rational side, say that Bill Nye really made his points, and then I've heard the faith-based side say that, I think it was Ken Ham, that he made his points. But the only issue I have, and I advise everybody to go take a look at that debate for the entertainment purposes, but I felt like Ken Ham was more, and he admitted it, it was all, he didn't need to win or lose that debate. He just was making money for his little museum he was putting together. So it was kind of like politics. Politics right. as usual. He's going to go out there, say what needs to be said to earn some money. So, you know, he really, I don't think there's much credibility there. So, but I guess we could start.
And if you want to go into that debate, there's places for that. This just isn't one right now.
I think our side of the conversation is going to be like, there has been evolution. There continues to be evolution. It's just, maybe we know what it is, maybe we have an idea, or maybe not, but I think we're going
at it. So what is your idea of what you think evolution stands for, or what it is?
Well, to get started, I'll read an official definition of evolution.
Okay, that's a good place to start. Is this Webster's?
It's probably not Webster's.
Okay.
But it's similar. Okay, it's on my iPad. So I think it's Wikipedia, which, you know, is true.
Everything on Wikipedia is true, so.
Well, as far as definitions go on Wikipedia, it's pretty close.
Right, now, okay. So let's hear what Wikipedia has to say the definition of evolution is.
Evolution is the change in the inherited characteristics of biological populations over successive generations. Evolutionary processes give rise to diversity at every level of biological organization, including species, individual organisms, and molecules such as DNA and proteins. So that's the basic part of it.
Well, I think a lot of people too get confused, and that was a great definition because it's not necessarily, I think what some people consider to be evolution, I might call adaptation.
Adaptation. Yeah.
So if you're adapting to your environment for survival, such as like natural selection would be in Darwin's theory, I think there's a gray area there, but I do think that that's more adaptation than it is evolution. Because if you're not evolving into something that's better, then you're devolving.
Is that correct? I think
you're adapting.
Right. There's some books out there called, there's a book out there about devolution, I think it's called. So it's kind of saying that we as a species are.
Or is it devolution?
Could be. But I thought we were staying off that subject. No. But my feelings on evolution is we find as we adapt to our environment, certain traits stick around because it's important, and other ones just kind of fall by the wayside.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I consider to be adaptation, because there's been so many studies on it, but they have the remember the couple that went to the Galapagos Islands to study the birds for decades, the Grants, I think they were called, and they went there and they sat and watched all these different types of birds, and they watched within less than a generation, like sometimes within a lifespan, one lifespan of a bird, it would adapt to its environment. But then within just very simple couple generations, like beak structures would change because seeds were harder to acquire within the rocks. And so they became pointier and things like that. So I consider that adaptation because it's about survival. It's not really evolving into another species. It's not evolving into a higher animal or being. It's actually just adapting for survival.
That I think you're onto something there, but don't so you're not a believer that we were once fish swimming in the ocean?
I personally don't know that I was, but things again, the adaptation can cause a mutation, and that mutation can then turn into a different animal. And at that point, it becomes an evolutionary process. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. And either way, it's going to take forever. We may adapt to our environment pretty quickly within one generation or a few, but over millions of years, that's something totally new. And I won't...
To create a brand new species, I guess.
And I won't pretend to understand all of that from a scientific level. It makes sense. I can see how it could happen and scientifically how it could happen, but I won't pretend to understand it on that level. I'm not a scientist.
I don't know it either. And to some degree, and I guess this kind of does get into the debate of creation versus evolution that we weren't going to get into, but there has to be some sort of intervention.
What kind of intervention are you speaking about?
I think that there's an intervention in our evolutionary process. So when we talk about a fish going to a human, I don't know that it happened all naturally. Not that intervention is unnatural, but that there may have been some tampering with DNA. Now, it's been proven that species can actually alter their own DNA. There's a jellyfish that alters its own DNA within its own lifespan. It can change the molecular structure of its DNA strands, which is amazing. I mean, some of the things that we can do, again, is that adaptation or is that evolution? I don't know. But if that can be tampered with and manipulated within one lifespan, who's to say that if there were other beings that encountered our planet, could they not then say, oh, well, this would be really easy to manipulate or make like this?
So, Fox Mulder, would this be aliens?
I didn't say aliens. I said people encountering this planet. That could be interdimensional, intergalactic.
That's some pretty far out there, hard to prove stuff, though.
Well, I think everything that we're talking about is going to be a little bit hard to prove. But
except the 6,000-year-old timeline, that's obviously made up.
Because, I mean, if you look at it, and that's important, I think, to put it into perspective. Because if we look at, okay, so we're going to say, if you don't mind, I'm just going to put this all in perspective, because this is a little bit mind-blowing when you really think about really the duration of the existence of our universe. And I'm not even saying it's the only one or the oldest one, but our universe is 13.8 billion years old. Our galaxy is like just a little bit younger than that. Our solar system's like, 4.5 billion years old. You know, our Earth is 4.5 billion years old. And I don't know that we can grasp the reality of what 4.5 billion years looks like.
I have trouble with just 40 years sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. And if you put that in, so then we think, okay, after the first billion years, there wasn't much of anything. So about 3.5 billion years, what we had, like, cells on the planet. And then the oldest dinosaur is about, 15 million years old. So we're talking billions and billions of years have gone by. And then all of a sudden we've got dinosaurs about 15 million years ago. We got plants and stuff, you know, early humans, some say go back to 2.5 million years, right?
Is this similar?
So we got Lucy. Lucy was that supposed missing link. Do you remember that? Where they had the bones of the primate that walked upright. It was supposed to be the missing link. When they found out later that the bones didn't actually go to the same animal, but that was considered to be like maybe 3.5 million years old. So I don't know about that one. That one ended up being not so good. But then Homo sapiens, we're looking at like 130,000 years ago, 150,000 years ago. Right. So, I mean, when we start getting down to it, we're talking, Jesus was a couple thousand years ago? So, I mean, pyramids were 10, 12,000 years ago, and that was our first writing on this planet that we know of. So we're really, like, if you were to stretch that out on a piece of paper, like, you couldn't even represent human existence with the width of the lead of your pencil.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you get to that point. Let me see. Lucy was considered, let me see, I have it right here.
Well, didn't I just tell you what it was?
Australopithecus.
Okay.
That's the scientific name.
Mm.
So.
And she was a primate, so to speak. So right. When you put it in those kind of terms, I guess the point that I was trying to get to is the fact that we really don't know what is really going on. So to say that we came from fish or we came from another civilization, I mean, we're talking billions of years unaccounted for that we can't say, was there another civilization on our planet? Did we evolve from them? Did things from other parts of the galaxy land here? There could have been whole civilizations grown and destroyed that we don't even have remains of because they're billions of years old.
We can't claim
to understand everything that's happened just within our little planet.
Are you talking like Atlantis-type stuff?
I am very much talking like Atlantis-type stuff. And if we want to get into the, you know, some really deep theories on evolution, there's a really good book called The Secret Doctrine, not to be confused with The Secret, but The Secret Doctrine, written by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky.
That's an old book, isn't it?
Yeah, it was written late 1800s.
She was a devil worshiper or something?
Some claim, because they did not understand her, that she may have some things to do with the dark arts, but she was one of the leaders, founders. She may have been one of the actual founders of Theosophical Society, which the Theosophical Society basically combined science, religion, and philosophy. And they took all three aspects of those categories and they merged them together to find, you know, basically come up with the answer to everything. Well, I don't know if it's the answer to everything, but Madame Blavatsky was not only one of the most brilliant women ever to walk the face of the earth, but she was also very intuitive and clairvoyant. So she had some inside information that she got from other sources. But according to this book, and it goes in painstaking detail of how man actually evolved to what we are today, is there was actually different root races. So you have like the first root race, second root race, and these root races were created by beings.
So,
and some consider, go ahead.
First off, it sounds like you somewhat like Blavatsky. Did I say her name right?
I think she's Blavatsky. Yeah, she's pretty much one of the most brilliant people ever to have existed.
Okay. But another thing is if you're talking about different, was it races you said?
Root races.
Root races.
Root, like R-O-O-T.
So but isn't that kind of dangerous when you start saying something like that? Isn't that where the Thule Society came from later on when they started trying, or Hitler tried to say that certain races were above other races?
And I see where you're going with that. And there was a lot, it does convolute the conversation because it doesn't get to the heart of what it really is. When I talk about a root race, I'm talking about an actual creator being creating a race of beings. So we're talking about creation at that point, but more on a scientific level. So if we believe that there are creators more than one, which if you look in the Bible and they talk about God, they actually talk about God in the plural. When they say Elohim, that's actually a plural name for God. So that you believe in gods, which actually are multiple creators, creating a civilization, who's to say they didn't do this multiple times? Obviously, they've done it more than once. According to Blavatsky, we're actually, and I think it started with the Atlantean race, which would be the fifth root race, which they call Manu. The Hindus call Manu, which is where we got the word man from. Mm. And then there's sub-races within that race. And we are actually entering into, as of the 21st century, the sub-race, the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race. And I'm simplifying it really bad compared to how it is in the book, and it sounds super complicated.
I can tell you now, Katie will be posting some stuff on her Facebook page to help
to
you.
To support this. And, right. And that, I'm just throwing that out there to show that we may not totally understand it. And even if we could understand it, could we understand it, I guess, is my question. Because I read the book, and I've read The Secret Doctrine, and I'll tell you, I don't understand it all. It's very, very complicated, and it gets into the DNA and the genetics and how you create, and how does a creator create other beings. And it comes down to one thing, that we're actually all part of one being anyway, but being able to subdivide, and that's where I think the sub-races come in. So you have a root race from here and a root race from here, but they're actually all from one origin.
The fish.
There you go.
Hence,
it all started with a fish. And that's why Christians have fishes in their minivans.
Hey, we missed Zoe.
Oh, Zoe made her podcast appearance.
This is becoming kind of a cool thing with Zoe. Now,
I'll post a picture of Zoe so everybody can see what she looks like.
Yeah, and she does not like our take on evolution. We might have to start paying attention to what she barks at. Maybe she doesn't like certain things we're saying.
Maybe we should pick up on that.
Yeah, or we just blasphemed the fish in her eyes.
Maybe.
Maybe just being kooky.
Very partial to the fish. So I know that's a little kooky and that's a little out there, but if we really want to look into where we're coming from, let's really look where we're coming from. I don't think people really want to see the answers. They want to say, oh, it's all simple and it's in this nice little package. And that's what humans tend to do, is we tend to package things up in our nice little beliefs. And as long as it goes with our system that we've always been taught, then we'll go ahead and carry around that belief with us, because we don't really want to open our minds and see reality for what it is, because it may be a little bit scary.
You know, and I see where you're what you're saying with that. It's always nice to have that book telling us that we're on the right path, that we're right with our mm-hmm. beliefs. To me, it's, in some ways, some of this stuff doesn't even really matter where we came from. You know, it may be like something we can know or we should know later on, or as we get more technologically advanced, we'll start finding this stuff out. But we spend too much time trying to justify our beliefs from past experiences instead of living the way we should, maybe.
And really good point. That's a great point.
Yeah, it's. I think, because I love history, so I think it's important to look back and learn from that stuff. But some of this stuff, when you're talking about religion, even evolution, it's so far back there and so hard to support that we work too hard to try to support the church we go to, the religion we believe, or the fact that some of us, you know, may not believe in a God or a religion, instead mm-hmm. of, you know, looking out for each other and saying, hey, there's a big the picture's much bigger than we're ready for at this point.
I think you are absolutely right about that.
Yeah,
I don't think we can know all the answers. And it took me a lot of years to be able to accept that statement, but we can't know all the answers in this existence. It's not part of what we came here to do.
Right.
And it took me a long time to be okay with that.
Yeah, and there's a certain strength that comes with letting that stuff go, letting the control of that go. It was funny, I was listening to another podcast where they're talking about something pretty much off subject, but the person had gone on an ayahuasca trip down to South America, and he'd been a cop a lot of his life in California. So I was on the SWAT team, and his point was that he wasn't that typical hard-ass cop that you hear about. He would, you know, he cared, but he would play that role because he had to. I mean, that's the job. And he talked about how his childhood, there were like 10 or 15 children in his household, so it was a little difficult at that time. And he's basically like our parents' age. So he, you know, he's from a different generation, a tougher generation in California, Southern California, LA and all that kind of stuff. But he went on this trip and basically came back realizing that he wasn't really as in control like he always thought he was. And it was nice to see that and feel that and understand that. That was his experience from this trip. his realizing he's not in control. And maybe that's what we need is, as a form of our evolution, is as a species, we need to understand we're not quite in control of things outside of, you know, what we can hold in our hands a lot of times.
It's a really good point.
And I think we'd be...
I think it's the cause of a lot of our turmoil.
Right.
Is the fact that we're trying to control everything.
Yeah, you look at politics, we want to control everything, including other countries, but then we don't want to be involved with other countries.
We just want to control them, but yes, we just want to be involved in them.
Yeah, as long as we can control the fact that, you know, maybe control the access to our borders and control the access to them having guns within our borders or explosives in our, you know, as long as we can control those kind of things and the religions they practice, we're okay with it, but...
That's all. We just want to control what you believe, what you think, what you do. But other than that, we total freedom.
Right. And I think if we saw that for what it was, it'd be a lot easier to accept. We're not perfect. We are
perfect. We're not perfect, but we're perfect the way we are.
We're where we're supposed to be right
we're
now.
We're where we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Which I think ties in exactly with what we're talking about as far as evolution. If we come back to present day, where are we going from here?
Where are we going from here, Katie?
Where are we going? According to Madame Blavatsky, if we are evolving as of the 21st century, which is pretty timely, I mean, here we are, that basically we will be evolving into a more heightened, sensitive, more aware species. We are evolving, and that's what I think is real evolution. Not necessarily the adaptation, but the evolution into a higher being, a higher animal, and I'm not saying higher as in better, I'm just saying more sensitive in the sense that we can perceive things differently. Maybe the veil that's over our eyes is now lifting just a little bit to where we can see just a little glimpse into what's really around us. And that heightened awareness takes us to a different evolutionary state as a species, as a race.
And you know, it's funny because as much stress as we have in this world, we think that we don't have time to figure this out, to maybe become more enlightened, to take that next step.
But the nice thing is, though, that not everybody has to. You know,
right.
Not everybody's driven... drives themselves crazy to do it. And you know what? I think that's okay. Nobody has to understand the answers. Some people are more curious than others, but it's really about existing on your own level. No one's better, no one's worse, no one's higher, no one's lower. Everybody is just existing in their own plane of existence, and that's okay. If we could all appreciate that everybody is right where they need to be, it's one of the lack of control. It's just like you were talking about. We don't need to control that. Appreciate everybody for where they are.
Right. And I think it's getting easier. One of the things that you'll see and it's actually a theory with evolution, is the fact that in the past, maybe Lucy in her...
I love Lucy.
Yeah, in her form... I love it. Took me a second.
Sorry.
I spent many a day with I Love Lucy and the Brady Bunch, but that's a different evolution. Well, one of the theories is one of the reasons that we, even in this hectic time, can spend more time thinking about where we came from, where we're going, what our purpose is in this world, is the fact that we don't have to spend too much time hunting for our food.
It's true.
Making our, well, basically, Lucy in her form spent most of her day chewing her food. She would have to find it, which in at that time was mainly like leaves or different kinds of vegetables, and because of the type of food that she found, she would spend a good part of the day chewing it. And we kind of take it for granted how easy it is to eat something, but if you're chewing something like a plant that's not cooked and softened up, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And one of the theories is there's actually a documentary out there called Catching Fire, and it's not you know, the movie about teenagers being put on a game show where they kill each other that's really popular right now. Catching Fire is about how cooking made us human. And it's a British primatologist named Richard Wangham.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, his theory is that once we started eating cooked food, we were able to, our prefrontal cortex was able to develop more because we spent less energy processing, digesting, and finding food. It was broken down in our bodies a lot easier. So
well, that's interesting because fire actually changed our evolution right there.
Yes.
So that goes perfectly along with that whole thing, that there was a huge spark, no pun intended, in a jump in our evolution as humans when fire, and what's interesting is that fire sprang up on different parts of the planet at the exact same time.
Right.
So it's in, you know, not just one area had it. I don't know how they determined that, but that's supposedly the story. So that's goes right along with what you're saying.
And it could have been, and there's a lot of controversy with this idea, but it could have simply been in an area of, say, Africa or Asia, or even the Americas at that time, where there were a human-like species. How did they all of a sudden decide to cook their food? Chances are there was some kind of lightning-produced fire. They were hungry and found some kind of animal or deer out that had been burned and ate it. Because when you're hungry, you're going to eat. And maybe they found that worked better for them. Maybe they got more energy, or maybe it tasted better. Who knows what happened? But mm-hmm. That could have started the process by adaptation of becoming human.
Interesting. Well, according to the movie Caveman, there was an egg that fell on hot lava. Do you remember?
No, I don't, but that...
You never saw the movie Caveman?
It's been forever.
With Ringo Starr?
I never heard of this Ringo Starr guy. Was he in a band?
Was he in a band?
Sorry.
I highly recommend Caveman. I think that's really how it went down.
How could you highly recommend Caveman if it has Ringo Starr in it?
It's one of the funniest movies ever,
made. I see. All right. So that's one theory of how we started developing as humans. And it's from all of our perspectives, because we like to cook our foods now, even though we are trying to find a better way to eat, say, our vegetables without cooking them. And we find that overcooking vegetables takes away a lot of the nutrients.
And the vitamins. Yeah, that's true.
Right. But we're talking about meat. That could be what made us a different type of ape as we started eating meat. Not all apes eat meat, and the ones that do don't eat it all the time.
But aren't we the only omnivore? Well, no, there's other omnivores, right?
Right, right. So it's kind of an interesting theory. I like it. It's fun to think about. I think when we put up this podcast, we'll post some links to that. Now, one of the most interesting types or ideas on human evolution comes in the form of magic mushrooms.
Okay.
And I believe it was put forth by Terence McKenna.
Terence McKenna, I don't know that name.
He supports, you know, magic mushrooms. And I know we're talking shiitake, and we kind of have our psychedelic mushrooms up there. That's not necessarily promoting that. I think we're promoting a type of freer thinking that might be associated with those that
ingest.
Well said. Right. And so it kind of ties in with our title, the name of our show. But basically,
so magic mushrooms aid in our evolution?
Yes. Basically, say, some type of ape species found mushrooms, which were pretty abundant and pretty healthy. And then it's been throughout history in different parts of the world. Let's say Africa, because that's where we like to talk about where we're coming from. But mm-hmm. all the continents you can find, except for, like, you know, the frigid continents, you can find magic mushrooms growing naturally. Mm-hmm. And their theory was that this ape species started to eat them, and their minds would change a little bit to where eventually it led into a more, again, a prefrontal cortex, language, and more humanistic thoughts. And this is way out there as far as theories. And I think we're a long way off of being able to accept that as an actual thing, because basically it's almost considered drug culture.
And it is, but if you look at how it actually affects the mind, then it does actually make sense, because we have sensors in our brain that allow us to keep from going completely insane.
Right.
If we could take in all the information around us all at one time, we wouldn't be able to handle it. So we have these inhibitors that keep us from being overly bombarded with information and, super saturated.
Right.
So when we do things like, from what I understand, mushrooms and ayahuasca and the different things, it actually reduces those inhibitors, which now we are able to take in more information. And this is why you do hallucinate. This is why you feel things and sense things that you don't normally do, because these inhibitors are now not working properly.
Right.
And you're being flooded with more, your senses are more open to the information around you. And what it said is that certain people that consider this to be an enlightening experience, you have actually tapped into information that you aren't necessarily supposed to as a human being. Once you do, you can't necessarily go back.
Right. It kind of takes down the wall.
Because now it's opened up. It takes down the walls. It takes down the veil.
Yes.
I believe that there's a veil over us that's protecting us. And when you start messing with that veil, you start seeing things for what they really are. That absolutely could aid in evolution, because now you're seeing things for what they are. You're able to teach those to the people around you, able to see, now they can see it, maybe without the aid of mushrooms, because just by the mere fact that you can now understand it takes you to another level.
Right, and maybe that's a process in evolution, as we see certain, let's say, marijuana becoming more acceptable in a lot of areas, and something like the magic mushrooms becoming a part of dealing with our soldiers' post-traumatic stress disorders. It's 10 years from now, we will probably have a better idea of whether this is just like a wild goose chase or somebody wanting to find a way to get high and using these kind of things as an excuse. But it's definitely something that should be studied. And there's actually a
catalyst. Well, like in nature, though, there's always more than one way to get there. That's right. Only one route to be able to get to that heightened sensitivity.
Right.
There are other ways to get there, too. So we got to understand that we're not necessarily condoning this is our only way of evolution. This is just one way that it may have happened.
Right. This is a theory. And this is even a theory that the Catholic Church has studied. There's kind of an underground book. Katie and I have talked about doing a show on the book, but it's actually a really complex book. So it's going to take us a long time to read and maybe figure out how to make it entertaining. But it's called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, and by a John M. Allegro. And it's a really hard book to get now because it's been taken out of print, but you can find it online in PDF form, so you can basically read it. But I mean, that's part of that theory goes along with evolution and just the whole that also adds to it the mystical experience that you see maybe in some of our ancient religions. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's not something that I don't think Katie and I know much about, but it's something that we should, you know, everybody should take the time to listen to, not necessarily do, because it's pretty far out there as far as counter culture goes, and I'm not sure everybody's should be doing something like that. And studies show that certain kinds of people that are prone to depression shouldn't be even walking that path. But it is a theory that's out there about evolution, and it's crazy sounding, but it's kind of fun to listen to because it's completely entertaining.
But once again, we don't know the answers. So why not explore different options? And I truly believe that we already have the answers within us. you know, we already know all the answers, although we can't necessarily access all of them at this point. There's a there's information that is considered to be held in the Akashic Records. Have you ever heard the Akashic Records?
I've heard of the Akashic Records, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people haven't, so why don't you tell us a little bit about them, Katie?
The Akashic Records are basically all the information that can be known, and is not necessarily just, it's a library of information, but it's not necessarily held in books. It's held in vibrational type energy. So you can tap into the Akashic Records at any given time. Everybody has the ability to do it, but you have to be able to resonate with a certain frequency of that information. So you can only receive information that you're ready to receive, because it will blow your mind if you receive stuff that you weren't ready for.
Right.
So you have to match that vibrational frequency in order to be able to receive that information. So if you're reading something, let's say a book that interests you, so you're matching that vibrational frequency of the information that you're now receiving, because you are enjoying it and it's you're comprehending it and you're getting it, then all of a sudden you feel like, wow, this really feels true to me. A lot of times you can use that intuitive, I mean, a lot of people, it's kinesiology, basically, that you're using within yourself, that you can say, okay, this is true information. And then you can hone that skill to know what is true and what is not, or at least within a certain variation.
Yeah, I truly found the truth when I started reading Harry Potter and understood that I was a muggle and would always be so.
See, you connected with that real information.
Right. I say that jokingly, but I think you're right on that.
Or do you?
Yeah, Harry Potter is a great series.
So, but the Akashic Records are there. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the information is always there in front of you. It's not just at your fingertips through the internet, but it's within your being. But you have to be at a place where you can receive the information. It's like tuning into a radio station that matches your frequency or your mood at the time. If you're in the mood for some, you know, death metal, and that's what you tune into, then you match that frequency. It's very similar to that.
Have you ever been in the mood for death metal?
I am pretty often in the mood for death metal.
See, I'm never in the mood for death metal.
Maybe not death metal, but heavy metal. Iron Maiden type,
okay,
metal. I mean, not necessarily. There's a few occasions I'll tune into some death metal, but not very often.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hadn't heard you listen. I've heard you listen to heavy metal, but not
death
metal.
Heavy metal. Death metal's a little more extreme.
Yeah, that's like listening to the devil throw up, you know, while he's trying to sing.
It's a little too hard to understand. I like the more melodic metal, like Iron Maiden, Queensryche kind of.
As I've gotten older, I've evolved to the point where I listen to a lot more mellow music than I used to listen to. I'm like...
And that happens to most people as they get older. Isn't that interesting? That's almost an evolution in and of itself.
Right. You know, the nice thing, though, in this form of evolution, when we're talking about music, I remember my parents and even my grandparents talking about the music kids listen to these days.
Uh-huh.
I don't quite hear that quite as much anymore. It's really interesting. I know a lot of people listen to some country music, and I don't know why, but that's just my personal preference. But, you know, it's been around for a long time. But
country music is your personal preference?
No, I don't know why.
Oh.
People would listen to it. Not that there's anything wrong with country music.
Not that there's anything wrong with country music.
I mean, I'd compare it to like a Britney Spears type of music. Justin Bieber, pop music. I mean, that's kind of the way it is now, in my opinion. But for the most part, modern music, you don't see people ripping quite as much, other than the fact that most of it is pop and canned. But when you get to the, I guess, more eclectic or alternative styles that they have now, it's kind of funny to see how society has evolved and is more accepting of kind of weird music these days. You know, when they'd freak out because Elvis was out there, or the Beatles, or whatever, before. Or, what is it, Led Zeppelin-style music. Everybody freaked out when those bands came out, but and groups. But now it's more accepted.
But I think it got to so far to the extreme of the Marilyn Manson-type thing. I mean, at that point, where do you go? It doesn't go much further than that. And so... what I think people just stopped complaining about it. But the interesting thing about music and how it has evolved is music is so different than just words. It almost transcends the consciousness and goes right into your deep subconscious emotion. And that's why music is so incredibly powerful. I'd love to know the history and the evolution of where music began. I'm sure it was just like in the movie Caveman, but and you should definitely YouTube that clip of music starting in the movie Caveman because it's highly entertaining. But basically, you know, tapping two bones together. I don't know how it started, but music definitely stuck around for as long as we've known. And there's even proof that music can heal you. You know, there again, we're talking about the vibration and the resonance within your body. Your body has a certain tone to it. And if you can match those tones with music, it actually can heal your body, soothe your body. So I think as we become older, we are drawn to those more soothing tones because it allows us to maybe heal and grow. I don't know.
And science does prove that how important music is to humans. And how much it helps, and how it's become part of our it's an important part of our life now. What even if we right. do listen to something as horrible as country music,
or death metal?
Death metal's not death metal's not that much better. Unless of course you like it, then go ahead and listen to it, and I'm
that's
cool with
what
that.
I'm saying. Whatever resonates with you, whatever frequency you're at that time, and you need to do it. Go for it.
Yeah,
but there are some powerful healing music. There is some powerful healing music out there. There's a lady by the name of Alea Dao, D-A-O is how you spell her last name. And she's actually a sound healer.
That's some kooky stuff, Katie.
Look it up. She has some free stuff on her website, aleadao.com.
Didn't she spell her last name wrong? Shouldn't it be T-A-O?
Right, it should have been right. Supposedly, and she's an interesting lady, but she heals through sound, and it's pretty interesting how she uses different tones, human voice tones as well as musical tones, to match the tones of like your chakra system and stuff. It's pretty interesting, but I think that's kind of where we're going with the evolution, to understand those kind of things. So sometimes asking those questions is not necessarily bad.
Well, I know. Sometimes from watching television and paying attention to some of the modern media and news channels, it really sometimes doesn't feel like we're evolving. I mean, we're still fighting wars for ridiculous reasons. We hate each other because we don't believe in the same God, or we want to condemn those people that don't believe in God at all. And so it kind of seems like when you look at it, in media and things like that, it almost doesn't seem like we've evolved at all. Almost like we're devolving. But I'm not
sure.
Some
people definitely believe that.
Right, and I'm not one of those. I tend to believe that we're getting to a better place. We have the potential to move to a better place all the time. And maybe all the strife that we see in the confusion is just part of that growth. I mean, through this whole podcast, I've been expecting Katie to say something about the age of Aquarius and start singing for us, but...
When the moon...
That right there is what happens when you hang out with Katie. I'm glad she finally brought it out for us.
It really is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, and we can get into that. That's where we are moving galactically, you know, as far as where... we are positioned in the galaxy. And that's a whole nother thing. We'll talk about that. I think I touched on that in the one about the harvest.
Right.
And I can
see that this podcast on evolution is going to be more than one part. Now that we've kind of thrown about the where it came from, I almost think we're going to have to do another podcast soon about where we're going with this.
Where we're going. And, you know, it's hard to say. I think that time will definitely tell where we're going. But as far as the turmoil that's happening on this planet, and we see that we're not evolving and that kind of thing, I think there are certain people in power, beings in power, that are trying to maintain the construct that we are divisive. But if you talk to the masses, they're sick of it.
Right.
People are sick of politics. They're sick of the divisiveness. They're sick of the wars. They're sick of their children dying for what? For what reason? For the brainwashed masses to kill each other because your God's different than mine when it all comes from the same book anyway, and that could be a whole nother podcast, but that's what people are done with it. And so they're trying to hang on to this house of cards, but I'm telling you, I truly believe that that is going to crumble. And it may not look pretty at first, but it has to crumble for us to rebuild.
Right, and we need to...
And to break through that. It's like a birth, you know? There's pain when it comes through birth, but when you on the other side, that's where you end up. That's the beauty that we will end up to be. But we have to just have faith and not control, like we were talking earlier, and kind of let go a little bit and allow the process to happen.
I agree. I think that's going to be our one of our next podcasts is where we take that next step and talk about that. And I
agree.
I definitely think we should, if anybody wants us to go a certain way or answer certain questions on this, whether it be the religious aspects we kind of touched on, the historical or scientific aspects, please let us know what you want to hear.
Absolutely.
And now, you did mention House of Cards, Katie. Have you been watching it?
I'm not too far into it. Maybe 6 episodes?
Yes. You know, normally, I just think everybody should watch House of Cards. I think it gives you the most honest take you're going to find on politics.
Good perspective on it, of what's really going on. It's all just a bunch of back scratching.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, and I think I just finished the series up to now, and I think it's really interesting to see the presidential perspective, all the politics between the House and the Senate, and it's more realistic, I think, than what you are normally going to see on Capitol Hill and in the news, because you do see a lot of the basic human parts of it. So everybody needs to watch that show just to kind of give you a better idea of what's going on in Washington and why it's so ridiculous.
Is that everybody's homework?
That is everybody's homework, and it's entertaining.
And read some Blavatsky. I'm just saying, touch on it. You don't even have to read the whole Secret Dark. It's a really huge book.
I promise you, you're not going to hell if you read Blavatsky.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
And you may not get it, but just read the synopsis online or something, and it'll give you a different perspective. That's all I'm saying.
And if you're worried because you're very religious and you're concerned that your parents, your family, your church might look down upon you, you don't have to tell them you're reading it. Read it, learn, educate yourself. Worst case scenario is you know how to deal with your enemy.
Mm-hmm. Or surround yourself with less judgmental people.
Exactly. And life will be better.
So that being said,
I think we can wrap it up, Katie, for now.
Okay, let's do it.
How would you like to wrap it up this time? No, I'm just joking.
With a nice little bow.
With a nice little bow. What color? Yellow?
Green.
Green?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll do a green bow on this one.
Okay.
Any parting shots, Katie?
No, I'm good.
No? Okay,
I'll save it for the next one.
All right, I'm just going to say, once again, you are entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts.